Hi everyone, welcome to the second podcast of Inspiring Nelson Leaders. Today I've got Hamish Turner with me. Hamish Turner lives in Marpore, just around the corner from where I do. Over the last 3 to 4 years, I've started working with Hamish and unearthing basically what he's done over the last sort of probably 10 years, and it's really it's been quite a journey and some huge successes, and I thought he would be a great candidate to share his story with us and learn some insights around scaling a business and exiting a business, etc. So welcome, Hamish.
Thanks, Manoli, and hi to everyone out there.
Brilliant. So like I say, Hamish, this is pretty informal, but we'll just kick it off. I've got a few leading questions to get you started. So for you, where did it all start, and where are you from?
Okay, I was born in New Zealand, but raised, from 10 to sort of 30, age 30, in Australia or mid north of South Australia, and then came back to New Zealand, saw the light about 10 years ago, and at that point I was approximately 30 and started my own property management business. But where it all started was back when I was around 19. I had a back injury. And I worked I was in a rehab sort of, I call it the system, but I was basically working towards getting my back functionality after an injury, a fairly severe injury occurred. And I came through work experience getting in a real estate office in Glenelg, South Australia. And that's how I sort of got into the industry. I've been in the industry for about 20 years now, and that's where it all sort of started from. Prior to that, I'd never worn a tie. I didn't know how to shave for more than 2 days in a row, so it was a big education for me outside of actually just getting back into work, where I'd work with my hands and with blue collar workers. I was all of a sudden in wearing a tie each day, and that was quite a big challenge for me personally, aside from the actual pain management that I had to deal with. So
So when you you sort of worked for free for a period of time?
When I started through the rehabilitation, which is government sort of enterprise that was helping people like myself getting back into work after an injury, I could either work in the public or the private sector, and I think there was about 100 people through the state of South Australia at that given time, and I was the only one trying to get into the private sector because I had a real hang up. Well, I didn't want to get into the public sector because I knew it was slow moving, and I didn't want to be part of something bigger and be part of something smaller and more but you know, as a 19-year-old, I was pretty immature really in my but that was how I thought and at that time. So I went around and talked to approximately 5 different offices and tried to get work experience because I knew that by doing that I'd be able to get some momentum. There was one agency being Ray McGrath Professionals at Glenelg who had 3 offices, and they were willing to give me a go, and I did all up it was 3 months of unpaid work experience, and I think it dragged quite a bit because they were a bit unsure about me. I sort of used to sort of scuttle in each morning because I couldn't walk very easily in the morning, so it was literally like a penguin walk or a scuffle walk to get into and sit on my chair and not move from that chair all day long and then get up and scuttle out. The level of pain was quite high, but I was quite mentally quite driven to get back and work because I'd sort of felt quite lost without that in my life, which had been occurring for about 18 months. So that was a harder struggle than the actual pain management.
Well, today I wanted to talk a bit about your success with rented.co.nz because that was basically a startup, then high growth, and then an exit.
Yep.
So can you give us a quick overview of what rented.co.nz is or was?
Yeah, so I'd sold the business back in early to mid-2016. I set it up from scratch in 2009, and it was a property management business but with a difference of giving the property managers full ownership of their particular portfolios. Now, that's not how it started in 2009. In a means of growing and expanding the business, I felt the best way to achieve that was to give the individual property managers within the group ownership. So I set up, 2009, I set up a property management business in Taranaki on New Plymouth, and I grew that to around 220, 230 properties over approximately 16 months, which is very, very fast pace. And I was asked by a couple of national groups to talk about this, and pretty foreign to me to hop up on the stage and speak, but that's what I did. Anyway, in 2012, so 3 years in, my wife and I wanted to move to Nelson Bay. So it might have been 2012, I forget. So, and I set up another office, but in doing that, I split up the book that I had of clients in New Plymouth, and I changed the model to one of ownership. And that how that basically worked is that all the administration of those books of clients was managed by myself or the team that I had, and the full ownership of the portfolios were purchased, one through vendor financing and a little bit of vendor financing. The other one was outrightly purchased by one of the property managers, and that it allowed me the capital to invest back into the next location, but more than that, my time. I had, and it sort of gave back to the property managers that were in the group with ownership and their opportunities. So everyone's ceilings were basically increased. And by maintaining the administration, which is a bit unusual for a franchise type model, usually the inner hub or systems and processes are part of the franchise or system, but I also did the administration, so that was rent processing of rents daily and processing of tradesmen account. I wanted to maintain control of that, one for income stream, but more so for control, whilst I was still sort of navigating my understanding of how a franchise works. So, and I did again the same in Nelson, and then into Blenheim, and then we purchased a book that was in three locations: Hastings, Christchurch, and Dunedin, and we brought that in with our and put the umbrella on top of those three. So we're in basically six locations within an approximate 4.5-5 year period.
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty quick, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you sold it.
I sold it. My wife and I really we're struggling having children. So we after many years and of treatments here in New Zealand, where we're going to pop over to Australia. We did have the one child. That was a long process, or I think about a 5-year process. And what we decided to do was sell the business, which wasn't sort of on the cards, but it was sort of crunch on doing that for that reason, and to move over to Brisbane and give that a crack over a couple of years. So the most logical thing to do was to sell the business as going soon. And I think, you know, it was quite frustrating because really I'd broken the back of the startup, and you know, I could look back and, you know, look at it a different way, because what happened, of course, is we had our second child with the last treatment. I think it was our 12th or 13th. Fertility treatment here in New Zealand, and our now son James is a what they call a 3BB, which is a one-off being discarded. It's a pretty average looking embryo, so we were pretty bit scared before he was coming out, when we knew you had gotten pregnant on this one not so good looking embryo, that he might have been missing an arm or two, or we didn't know. So, but
beautiful,
anyway,
beautiful boy now.
Oh yeah, he's gorgeous. But ironically, we sold the business, and we're all set to move overseas for 2 or 3 years, and just sort of see that through, because we knew we couldn't get that time or that window of opportunity back. So we really had to put more effort in than we already had. And ironically, I sold the business and we got pregnant, and then that's never left. So,
good. So what about culture? Because I've noticed that culture is a big thing for you. And, you know, when I started working with you, when you had rented, it was, you know, I'd be in meetings and you'd be talking on the phone, and I could just get that sense around having a good culture with your team, and you know, having some core values and all of those sorts of things was really important to you. And so, can you give me a little bit of a rundown how you see culture and how it's important?
Yeah, well, I will say with culture of a regionally based model, where you're not coming into an office each day, and the main reason for that was to increase profitability. So you didn't have a fixed office cost, which is one of your major costs of operating a small business. But I guess the one thing that in it, it hadn't dawned on me until I'd set up my second location, and you had the struggle of maintaining culture. And so what I did, a couple of the things that I did, I mean, I had group training. We'd have group training online once a month. But I had set KPIs with the guys, and I'd share with them how they go each month, and in a very systematic manner. And, you know, it was a good, bad and the ugly conversation at the end of each month. But I did things like an example of something I did to maintain culture was I had a photo of the month award, so everyone throughout the business could apply to have a photo of the month, and that photo that one out of the group of people would end up in the calendar for that month the following year. Excuse me, I'll just have a glass of water.
Yeah.
And so that we'd make up these calendars. Well, I'd make up these calendars at the end of the calendar year with the 12 winners for the 12 months. And each one of those winners would get $50 or $100, but more than that, they get bragging rights for the next month. They got the last month, and everyone would try to better it.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, we would have a photo of the year award, and that person would, I think it was a $1,000 gift card with flights, so a travel voucher. And then the calendars, everyone would get anywhere between 5 and 10 calendars for free, but quite often they'd buy 20 or so more that they could give all their friends and family.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It was just a way of maintaining culture. Outside that, I'd say that, you know, that the word that I was just writing down, what I'm thinking now is ownership, you know, individual ownership and raising a ceiling, which I think really helped with the culture, probably to 300 or 400%. And the other thing was integrity, always maintaining a strong level of integrity at all times. And
cool.
Yeah.
And in terms of your business, you know, scaling it up, you did it in quite a relatively short period of time. Is there anything else that you can think of that was real pivotal to achieving that scale?
Focus. Focus and discipline. Yeah. I had a very strong self focus, you know, my primary focus on growth, and I'd have my discipline was deadlines in terms of if I didn't achieve a certain KPIs that I'd set for myself, I would discipline myself with both rewards if I achieved something, and a deadline or a growth goal, and also I'm just trying to think of the word right now, it's escaping me, but I would discipline myself. For example, back when I started the business, I had to give out 6 business cards a day to 6 people I didn't know. Sometimes in the middle of a Taranaki winter, you don't want to go out and give out 6 business cards. But the discipline was that, or the punishment is the word that I'm looking for, is if I didn't achieve that, I would have to stay at work till 10 p.m. at night. So as a business owner, you know, who disciplines you, you know, for not achieving?
Right.
So I just knew that by having my own self, and I still do that now. I've always done that. I don't know why, but that's just how I work. another one was no beers. If I didn't get 10 or more clients in a month, I couldn't drink for a week.
Oh, right.
And back then I was a single fella, pre-wife, and and to not drink for a full week, not that I drank to excess, but it was a couple of beers on a Friday night. It was you know, it was the end of the week. That was that was my positive, because I was working some pretty ridiculous hours. And so no beer for a week really left its mark. And the next month, guaranteed. I think I only ever didn't meet a growth goal 1 month, and that was a week of no beer, and it just got seared into my body. So
that's right. Mm. So what about property management? It's really competitive. Like, there's lots of players out there. Mm. How did you guys go about creating some point of difference to your customers?
Over
and above your competitors. So, like, what did you do to?
Yeah, simplicity was the main. That's the one word that's popping up in my head right now. Mm. We had a one fee for service model.
Yep.
And the high majority of other agents have multiple fees, anywhere from three to five different fees. Whereas we had the one built-in fee. We had no fixed contracts with our clients, so if we there was another one. So usually there's a three to 12 month minimum fixed contract. We had a open ended contract, which meant we didn't do a good job, you could leave us without penalty. So you could liken that to a contract with your mobile bill. Minimum 12 month. We just didn't have any fixed term, and that made it much easier to convert the client and use our services, because they weren't there was no clawback on them, so they could go at any time.
Okay.
what's the other? The other two sort of
two
majors.
So it was quite disruptive in the.
Yeah, it really annoyed some of our clients, and our fee base was it was a 10% plus GST fee, and the average in the market's 7.6, 7.7 plus all your secondary fees. But my conversion level when I changed that early on in the piece was that my conversion rate went up much higher, because you aligned your interest with the client. So if the tenant wasn't paying their rent, we weren't getting paid ourselves. So whereas with the secondary fee model, there's all these other ones.
That's
so
right.
The other last and probably the most important one outside simplifying things and aligning interests was our 3 month money back guarantee. So if our clients were unhappy at any one time, we provided a 3 month money back guarantee. At the time, that was something that I don't think had ever been done before. Now, as a property management consultant, I see that all around the country, there's 30 offices in my head that I could name that have a guarantee certificate on there. And again, it's just backing yourself and saying that we make an error, we're prepared to pay, no questions asked.
Yep.
And it just simplifies your conversion, and it comes from a space of integrity too, of course, so that you're not holding the client in. But it's just, that was my way of doing things. And everyone has a different sort of take. There's pros and cons for doing that. For example, if you get a client that brings on four or five managements, uses you, and then wants to exit 3 months after you found a bunch of tenants for them for no good reason, that there's that risk. But that's unusual, and the pros in my view far outweigh the cons of having that guarantee.
I think it's fantastic. It's a classic example of disruption.
Yeah.
So here was this an old model of letting fees, management fees,
inspections routine,
all of these fees, and people like, you'd go to a barbecue and someone would say, I'm paying 7% for my property management. Someone else would go, I'm only paying 5%. But then if you actually looked at all the fees.
The other one, and you'd know yourself, Manoli, when you value rent rolls under your valuation within your business, is that the capital value attributed to a property management business directly comes from one fee, which is the management fee, which is generally about 80% of it's the primary, it does around 80% of on average fees, so of the entire business. So in having that one fee and having it higher, it meant the capital value of the business was higher. But that was an undercurrent to it all. And I only ever got asked, somebody pulled me up on that once in about 5 years. It was a local chap in Nelson, actually, Mark Rumsey. And I went, oh gosh, you got that. I've never been pulled up on that, but it was... But it's quite, I said, well, yes, of course, that was the undercurrent to it all, that you had a higher capital value without the necessary secondary income. So,
So what was the definition of your role in rented.co.nz, and where did you add the most value to the business?
It's a good question. Mm. And where did I add the most in growth? Be it early on in the piece sitting up and growing a portfolio. And then, you know, when I had Taranaki, the first office, so doing that on the tools. When I moved to Nelson, I took on a manager and taught them and to grow. And so really, the growth part of it, but it changed. The growth definition changed each time we got a new location on. So those first three locations was, the first one was me on the tools. The second one was me teaching someone. And then really between the second and the third one, I realized I had to really have really robust systems and structures and replace me with systems and structures so I could step away easily and the thing could still grow and still maintain and it need to live as a organism by itself without me. And perfect. So that's what I did. So I ended up developing.
So easy to sell that way too, because wasn't it all about Hamish?
Yeah, that's right. So it became about rented.co.nz. Probably once I hit that second, third, and third location, I built a procedures manual, which ended up being around 4,000 pages and hundreds of videos, and then that, you know, also had your culture, the photos through there, and a lot of HR, so it became its own living functional, and teaching people how to use it and embracing, because it's much easier to teach people coming in to use what's there, but to teach the historical people to use that, much, much more challenging. That's so you have to have a bit of fun and games with that, and incentivization and rather than disciplinary, incentivizing people to use it and making it part of their day. So,
Okay, so I think that's a great oversight of Rented and what you've done and all that sort of thing. Yeah. I've got just a couple of last questions, really. Who's been your biggest inspiration in business? And what can you recall from that person, and what do they say, and what sort of sticks in your mind?
Yeah, so I've got two people. One is a chap by the name of Andrew Rees, who set up a company called Pro Rentals, which was, he grew organically a property management business from zero to approximately 1,800 managements. And that I worked for him in my for about 4 years in my 20s. And I still have a lot of business dealings with Andrew today. He went off and sold that business and went off and started property management software, and is revolutionising how property management's done with the use of tech across Australia and New Zealand and now into the UK. So certainly him, in my earlier years, I left home when I was 14 and I worked for a guy called Mikko, who was a local butcher. And I didn't have the best structure family-wise growing up, and I was very fortunate. I actually started working with him when I was 12, and left home at 14, but it wasn't without that structure. But I learned how, I didn't realise at the time, but everything I did, he was teaching me. So, for example, I'd do my pay on a Friday night, and I would have to sit there and work out my hours and times table and work out dollars and change, and he had me on the till a lot, and he was, everything he was doing, he was teaching me. I learned how to drive a car, and he was very old school, in as much that he left home when he was he hadn't left home. His father had come back from war and had complications post war and passed away, and he took on the butcher, local small town butcher, and with about six other butchers, and he was 16 and he worked that business for 35 years, I think it was. So everything he'd learned was self-taught. So I got a good, really good sound grounding from him. And then so that the other two sort of guys that sort of stick out in my head is and I still have very strong, firm relationships with them. And actually, you know, it's filtered down. I give a lot of time to people. I don't know if you know this, Manoli, but I deal with about six people locally in our community, and I give them free consulting, because it's, to me, it's a give back And that's at no cost. It's sort of, I think the word's pro bono, is that right?
And
to me, it's about community and helping those people and their associated flow down. So I know that's sort of getting off the topic a little bit,
cool.
But
very cool. Yeah. And what about if you're in reflection, you got the 21-year-old Hamish Turner staring at you. What advice would you give to that young fellow?
Get into business a bit earlier. So I got into business when I was 30. Until then, I was well paid and working for others. But really, the true way of creating wealth to me is getting to your own business. And the best way to learn is by cutting your teeth. And and you know, once you trip, you fall and get up. Not carrying things forward. That's easier said than done. If you trip and fall and really graze your knee on something, a business partnership goes wrong, or in my case, a first marriage, or you know, which took me just leave it behind and learn from it and move forward. So does that sort of answer your question?
Two really, really good pieces.
Gems or
there.
Gold nuggets?
Exactly. Yeah. And last question: what's sort of next for Hamish Turner?
Well, I'm a business broker nowadays. I'm working and selling real estate businesses, primarily property management businesses across New Zealand. So there's three brokers in the country, and I'm doing around 80-85% of the work in that sector. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of just really starting to nail that now. after really starting to take it seriously 12-18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to move that up a notch and take on some team members, and you know, and have them specialize in certain areas that are associated with that. So that's where I'm at the moment. I think what I'd like to do, I have a keen interest in acquiring residential property, and I'm sort of gotten a little bit more focus on that in the last sort of couple of years, and I have a focus to take on one or two properties a year, and I'd like to do that probably I'm 39 now, through to around 43 is the number that I've got in my head, and then sort of sit and review and maybe plant myself in property development, because I enjoy that. I don't think it can earn me what I'm earning or what I'm doing with my broking work, and I really enjoy the broking work, but certainly I like to have something to default to. Nothing better than walking through Megamart at 10 with a trolley and one of the kids, and going through a checklist, picking up paint and brushes or whatever the tradesman. I quite enjoy project managing. And so that's where I'm sort of headed. So
perfect, awesome. Well, thanks, Hamish. Hope everyone enjoyed that. There's some really good nuggets in there around culture, around you know, cutting your teeth and just having a crack and learning from those mistakes, but not dwelling on them, and looking forward for the future. And so I thought it was a good session, and thanks, Hamish, for doing it.
Thanks for having me, and I apologise for the coughing. I'm not sure where it's come from. So, but anyway.
Two young kids.
Just nervous around Manoli, but no. So, thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.